Hello, everybody. Teresa, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, great. So you heard? Did you hear all that stuff going on? Okay. Welcome, everybody. We're very pleased to have everybody with us today for this teleseminar. My name is Tom Unger. I work as a mental health professional, as a psychiatrist at North York General Hospital in Toronto. With me today is Teresa Claxton, who I'll introduce in just a moment. And our topic today is Partners in Recovery, How to Speak to Your Care Provider. We're very thrilled to have everybody with us today from coast to coast, east to west, top to bottom in Canada for this national teleseminar. Just to let you know the agenda today, what I'm going to do is begin by just telling you a little bit about this project and how we're able to do this with sponsorship by the Canadian Council on Learning through a funded grant that we achieved. I will then walk you through a little bit about the ideas of the project and our free multimedia resources, our website treatment guidelines, audio minutes, podcasts, and vodcasts. And then we'll get to our guest speaker, Teresa, and talk a bit about today's specific topic about how to speak to your care provider. So I will just begin by telling you a little bit about the idea of the project and what was behind it. Our project is funded by the Canadian Council on Learning. We have project partners and our lead agency, the National Network for Mental Health, as well as our partners, the Mood Disorder Association of Ontario and the Participants Council at North York General Hospital and the Ontario Association of Patient Councils. The idea behind this was to try to get mental health information that was both credible and evidence-based, but designed in a practical, useful, and consumer-friendly method out to be available to empower people, to inform them, to know what they should be looking for, and to, in fact, create resources that they can share the information with others and, in fact, take some of the resources to their care providers if needed to discuss their own care and perhaps prompt their providers to change or help them initiate certain aspects of their own care and to generally inform people about mental health. So that's the idea of the project. The vehicle for delivering some of this information and content currently is something called the Mental Health Minute. That is a project that I had going, and that consists of a variety of absolutely free multimedia resources. We have a website, and the address should be on your registration sheets at www.mentalhealthminute.com, all one word. On that website, if you go to that, you will see a variety of resources. You will see some information, print material about a variety of mental health topics, and we continue to develop content and will continue to be adding to the site over time. On these various topics, you will see some consumer-friendly treatment guidelines, which are one-page information sheets developed for the public as general information and for consumers so that if someone thinks they may have a concern or a condition that they identify with, they can print this off, begin doing some own self-help, and take this to their provider to find out if it's appropriate for them. Again, it's general information, and you have to go to your own provider to see what's specific for you. Also on the website, you will see 1 to 2 minute audio message. It's amazing what you can learn in a minute, and the audio messages are intended both for radio, for online information. You can download them, perhaps. And as well, we have longer information sessions called podcasts, which are about 8 to 10 minute sessions on various topics with the guest speakers or with myself speaking, period. We will also have this teleseminar posted so that you can listen to a longer session for information for you or your interested others. As well, we've even developed a few video casts or vodcasts, as we call them, which are similar to a public information message of perhaps 2 minutes in length, very similar to the audio minutes, but we call them video minutes. And you can actually watch them and perhaps hopefully get a little bit of information from them. Perhaps you'll find them humorous. We're trying to keep them friendly and light. And yet they're still based on quality information to perhaps capture the general public and destigmatize and inform people about mental health. So that's the idea of the project. We've developed a variety of other services such as this series of teleseminars, today's being on how to speak to your care provider. We developed the topics based partly on feedback we had from some focus groups and other forms of surveying. If you go to the website, we do have a survey link there, and if you could take the time, if you're interested, to just spend a couple of minutes just giving us some feedback, we welcome your input and feedback. It helps us design our information, and you will see that on the sidebar as a survey link. You just click on that and complete a few little clicks and send us back some feedback, so we'd appreciate that. I'm going to play you one of the audio minutes just to give you a flavor for the approach, which will take about a minute or two, and then we'll move on to our guest speaker to introduce her and get to our specific topic of the day. So I'm just going to hopefully get this working, and I think today we're going to listen to something about grapefruit juice. So just bear with me, and I'll get this going for you.
Do you enjoy a morning grapefruit juice with your breakfast along with a coffee? Well, unless you want to really be wired, there's something you should know. Drinking grapefruit juice can make drinking one cup of coffee pack the punch of three coffees. Why? Well, it's because grapefruit juice blocks your body's natural ability to digest the caffeine in coffee, tea, or cola. You see, the same enzyme in the liver, the cytochrome P450-3A4 subenzyme, is responsible for naturally breaking down the caffeine and the grapefruit juice. But the grapefruit juice wins out, and the caffeine builds up, reaching much higher levels than it would have had you not had the grapefruit juice. The grapefruit juice can also interfere with your body's ability to digest and metabolize a lot of other everyday medications you might be taking. So if you find you're extra shaky, edgy, irritable, or not sleeping well at night, and you drink grapefruit juice with your morning coffee, you may want to find out more. But juice lovers needn't worry. Orange juice doesn't do this and is perfectly safe. If you or someone you know is on medication and drinks grapefruit juice, or you mix grapefruit juice with coffee in the morning, you can find out more by clicking on www.mentalhealthminute.com. I'm Dr. Thomas Unger with your Mental Health Minute.
Okay, so Teresa, were you able to hear that?
Yes.
Great, thank you. So that's the idea of the approach of what people can learn in just a minute and how we're trying to message and inform the public. And then if people are interested, they can climb the knowledge cascade by clicking on the website, finding some recommended evidence-based links that we have going, both links to our partner organizations and others. And that's what we're trying to do, and we hope you find it of benefit. If you think it's of interest to anybody, if you know of radio, TV, any other print media that you think may be interested in the minutes, our funded project finishes the end of July, and then the Mental Health Minute itself will have to find another vehicle to continue. And we're open to all kinds of interesting collaborations because we think our work is hopefully useful and important. So enough about that. Let's move on to today's topic. I'm going to introduce our guest today, Ms. Teresa Claxton. Teresa, I've had the opportunity to work with Teresa. She is a visionary leader of patient and consumer advocacy. She is the chair of our North York General Hospital Participants Council, where both of us work, and I've been fortunate to be able to work with her, and as well is the chair of the Ontario Association of Patient Councils. I'll leave it to Teresa to let us know anything else about her work and what she wants to share with us. I can tell you that it's been a privilege for me. I've both learned from her, and it's been a pleasure to work with her, and I look forward to continuing to do that in the future. So welcome, Teresa, and if you want to just introduce yourself and let us know anything else about your work, and then I'll let you go ahead with how you can help us in terms of how tips on how to speak to your care provider. Welcome, Teresa.
Thank you very much for that warm welcome and good day to everyone. First of all, I'd just like to tell you a little bit about the Participants Council and the Ontario Association of Patient Councils so you know where I'm coming from. The Participants Council at North York General Hospital is part of the Comprehensive Mental Health Program. We offer peer support, leadership training, advocacy, and we provide a voice for participants of the mental health program in the planning, delivery, implementation, and evaluation of mental health services. The Ontario Association of Patient Councils is a provincial organization that brings together representatives from across the province from patient councils and psychiatric hospitals. We address systemic issues, the issues that are of critical importance to consumers and survivors, and we do this by working collaboratively with the government, hospitals, and other consumer organizations, and we promote the civil rights and human dignity for people living with mental health and addiction issues, and to promote mental wellness for all. So I want to talk a little bit about why I feel communication and a partnership with your healthcare provider is important to recovery. And then I'm going to share some tips with you that I hope you'll find helpful in helping you and establish this type of relationship with your healthcare providers. For over 30 years, I have been a consumer of mental health and addiction services, and probably, just like some of you, I have had both good and bad experiences. I now realize that most of the bad experiences were caused by a definite lack of communication between everyone involved. Where there was an inability to communicate, nothing was accomplished. I allowed others to take control of my care and my life, to make decisions for me without consultation. I felt powerless and incompetent, and I relied on others to fix me and to take care of me. In short, it kept me institutionalized. This lack of partnership sabotaged my ability to recover and achieve wellness. My first hospitalization at the age of 12, the first thing that the doctor said to my parents and myself was, "She'll never get out of here." And he further went on to say that I would never finish school, never work, never develop successful friendships or relationships. And he indicated that someone with my diagnosis would have to be medicated and institutionalized for the rest of their life. These strong statements, which turned out not to be true, are all that my parents and I remember about that visit. Later, when I was 16, I was diagnosed with diabetes. The doctor who saw me informed me that most diabetics go blind. Again, this is all I remember about this discussion. Although both these doctors gave me and my parents other important information, we could not process it because the negative statements overwhelmed us. Ineffective communication had become a barrier between us and the information we needed in order for me to become an active participant in my healthcare and take control of my life. Both of these incidents came at the start of life-altering experiences and dramatically changed my life. Today, we have the opportunity and the right to develop a collaborative partnership with our healthcare professionals so that we can make informed decisions about our treatment and care and have choice in the treatment and therapies we know are of benefit to us and will improve and maintain our wellness. Improved patient and provider communication and increased involvement of patients in decision-making are associated with improved behavioral, biological, and quality of life outcomes. In other words, if patients communicate their thoughts effectively, if their healthcare providers listen to them and communicate effectively, and if they both try to better understand each other's issues, it will increase the chance for positive results. We, the patients, are now taking control of our health care and becoming responsible for the outcome of our actions. Communication in health care is about forming an alliance with our health care provider to achieve the best possible outcome. Visiting a doctor or other health care professional can make you nervous, impatient, or even scared. You may only have a few minutes with your health care provider. We really need to sit down and examine our communication skills and see how they can be made to better serve us. We need a plan. Many times we go to our doctor, therapist, or case manager, or other professional, and we think we know exactly why we are there, what we want to say, and we'll remember all the symptoms we've been experiencing. Later, after speaking with our healthcare professional, we feel that we haven't explained it at all. We remember something we forgot to ask, or we may forget what the doctor or other healthcare professional said. We often feel that we are no better off than when we walked in the door. We return home kicking ourselves. Why didn't she understand what I was trying to say, we wonder. Why didn't she fix the problem? Why did we leave the office without the answers? We need to communicate on an equal basis and with mutual respect when it comes to our healthcare. Both patients and healthcare providers should be listened to and deemed to have valid points. Verbal communication is a complicated issue. We must be clear and precise when we are speaking to our healthcare providers, yet our illness may make being clear and precise very difficult. If we complain about a major issue, but the healthcare provider sees it as a minor issue, he or she might place too much emphasis on the wrong issue. We should organize our thoughts and write down our symptoms, the frequency, the acuity of these symptoms, and the questions we want answered. As patients, we should not let our healthcare providers ignore what we feel emotionally. To us, what we feel is real and just as important as physical pain. Feedback refers to the aspect of communication that pays attention to the effect of a message so that a person knows what to do next. If you say to your doctor, "I like to go fishing on weekends, but I don't feel good about being in open spaces," and your doctor's response is, "Chicken," do you feel that this is a comment on your fear or lack of confidence, or that he or she is ordering lunch? I would hope that it is a lunch order. At the least, it is really bad feedback because we have to guess what he or she means. Healthcare providers must be able to listen and provide feedback that can benefit the patient. If the feedback is unclear or the patient doesn't understand it, how can we guess what the person means? How can we act in a way that is beneficial and positive if we don't understand the message? Once we can learn to communicate more effectively with our healthcare providers, things will change for the better. We should not settle for misunderstanding. After all, proper understanding could be the difference between good care and bad care, between good health and poor health, and prevent us from achieving recovery and wellness. And when it comes to our healthcare, don't we all deserve the best? And I'd like to share with you some tips, which I hope will help you develop a dialogue on vital issues that affect your mental health and well-being with your healthcare professionals. And in short, these tips are to speak up, find your voice, ask questions, find the facts, evaluate your choices, read, understand, and follow instructions, and report back to your healthcare team. Always be honest. So always be honest with your healthcare providers about how you follow the directions, your treatment, your diet, your lifestyle, your medication. If you're not honest and your doctor adjusts your medication accordingly, it could negatively affect your health. So it's always important to be honest and also to share any issue that you have with your doctor, even if it might be in an embarrassing situation or something that you might feel might pose your doctor to be judgmental. Your doctor has more than likely heard it all before, and again, they're there not to be judgmental, but to help you with your issues and help you achieve wellness. Don't be stoic. Don't leave your healthcare provider's office feeling that you haven't been heard. If an issue is really bothering you and your healthcare provider has dismissed it or not given it the consideration you feel it deserves, you need to ask questions and have it raised again. Make sure your healthcare provider lets you know how long it will take for an adjustment in any new medication to take effect, and ensure you know what to do if the symptoms persist or get worse before then. So, for example, if your doctor adjusts your medication or prescribes a new medication, one of the questions you can ask them is, say, how long will it be before this medication takes effect? Is there anything that I can do in the meantime that will help me deal with the symptoms that I'm experiencing that are very troubling to me? So that might be your doctor might suggest some meditation, some deep breathing, but something to help you deal with those symptoms. If those symptoms persist and they worsen, then you need to ask your doctor, what do I do? Do I call you? Do I call a crisis center? What plans can we put in place so that I can talk to you about these symptoms and help prevent the few extra minutes you spend in your doctor's office talking about these issues can help prevent a crisis from occurring and prevent further visits or perhaps hospitalization. Remember, your healthcare provider works for you and is a partner in your healthcare. Don't allow anyone to take over your care. Your life is yours and yours to control as much as possible. So you need to dialogue with everyone involved in your care. It could be your health care provider. It could be your family member or a substitute decision maker. But you always have a choice, and you always need to have your voice in any decisions that are being made in regards to your health care. And you always have the right to ask for a second opinion and change your health care provider. Plan your visits, and this is probably the longest tip that I have for you. It's about being prepared. So, for example, if you need an interpreter, it would be important to call ahead and let them know that you do need that particular help in coming in. And when you do come in with the interpreter, ensure that the interpreter is a certified interpreter, or that the individual that is providing the interpreter services is identified as a staff member, but not necessarily a healthcare provider. It's also important, if you have a particular issue you feel you need more time to talk to your healthcare professional about this, it might be a good idea to call ahead and say you need an additional extra time and ask the office to accommodate that request.
Barbara Cadot.
Another suggestion is to keep a notebook or a journal of any symptoms you may be experiencing, also of your daily activities, the medication that you're taking, and this way you have a handy reference to bring with you to your appointment. I find quite often that I'm a bit overwhelmed when I get to my doctor's, and I find it really difficult to express myself. And I find what's worked really well for me now is when I write things down, I can either read them to my healthcare professional, or I can just hand over my notebook and say, this is what's been troubling me, and we can create a dialogue through reading those that information that I've kept in my notebook between visits. And then days before your appointment, you might also want to write down a detailed list of what you want to talk about and any symptoms you've been experiencing, concerns or new observations. So, for example, any sleep difficulties you're having or behavior changes that you've noticed, your inability to do certain things that you've done before and you want to continue doing. So these type of changes you could note and present to your healthcare professional. And try to be as descriptive as possible. The more your healthcare provider knows about you, the better they can work with you to develop an individual collaborative plan of care. Bring a list of all medications, including over-the-counter, any herbal or diet supplements, vitamins you are taking, and a list of your allergies, any alternative therapies you're participating in. And I think it's really important, even if this is a healthcare professional that you're seeing on a regular basis, that you take the effort to do that for each appointment, because quite often that information isn't at the front of our charts and records, and often the healthcare professionals are very busy and they don't have the time to flip through the chart. So it's just very helpful for them if you can provide that information for them up front, so that you can both consider that when making any decisions about treatment or medication. And what I find is very useful is I just keep a card in my wallet, and it lists all my medications and any treatment that I'm doing and any symptoms that I've been having. And that is particularly helpful if I'm in crisis and I find it very difficult to talk when I'm in crisis. I can just hand over my card, and some of the information that the healthcare provider needs is there for them to help take care of you. Again, try to be as concise as possible when you're making notes. For example, you might want to use a scale of 1 to 10 to indicate how distressing a particular symptom is. If you need advice on income support or legal and family issues, you can ask your healthcare professional, if they're not a social worker that you're speaking with, to refer you to a social worker or a case manager to assist you with with your problems, because we know that those additional stressors will affect anyone's mental health. And when you're dealing with a mental illness or an addiction on top of that, it could be extremely difficult. And it would be most helpful to ask your healthcare professional for assistance with that. Keep asking questions, and keep asking questions until you fully understand the healthcare professional's instructions for taking medications, when, how often, and in what amounts. And if you don't understand a word, an idea, or a direction, you need your doctor to explain it until you understand it. And it's even many people find it very helpful if you ask your doctor to write it down for you. And if you're already keeping a notebook, he or she might write down those directions in your notebook so that you have it as a handy reference. Some people find it helpful, and it may be a good idea to bring a supportive friend or family member with you to help take notes, remember instructions, and for moral support. You might also want to ask your doctor if you could bring a tape recorder and tape their responses to your questions and to any directions that they may give you. Some people find that very helpful. Note-taking is not their thing, so that would be something that you could ask your healthcare professional about to help you understand and comply with the medication and other care and treatment that the doctor or healthcare provider is suggesting. If your experiences with a certain healthcare provider are not exactly what you feel you need, don't be afraid to go on to another until you find one that fits your specific needs. Now, I have to provide a cautionary note here, because we all know that across the country, we have a shortage of doctors and specialists, and particularly psychiatrists in many areas of the country. I would always suggest to people that before you leave one health professional, you ensure that you have support of another health professional before you leave that particular therapeutic relationship. But again, don't keep going back to someone because he or she is supposed to be the best. They may not be the best for you. And if you feel you don't have a mutually respectful partnership with your health care provider, and you've tried to address this with them on a number of occasions, you might consider seeking out a new health care professional. And one of the things we have in the province of Ontario is called informed consent. And informed consent means that your doctor must tell you the benefits of the treatment they're providing, what the risks are, what the consequences are if you don't follow that particular course of treatment or medication. While that might not be true in other provinces, I think it's really important that we ask our healthcare professionals particular questions about why they are providing a particular treatment, what the risks are, what the side effects are, how you can deal with them, are there any other treatment or care that are available for your specific illness. And this needs to be provided to you in a language and a way that you will understand. And another helpful thing would be to ask your healthcare provider for three things that they think you could do that would help you to deal with your mental illness. And the other final thing I want to leave you with is that to never underestimate the value of networking with other people who have been through similar situations. They can share their valuable experience with communication with their health care provider, and you might learn some very helpful information from your peers about what could work for you, and learn about the positive experience of having valuable a collaborative partnership with your healthcare provider in helping you achieve wellness and recovery. It's empowering and it's important, and it's the only way that we can truly achieve wellness and recovery. So that's what I have to share right now.
Great. Thank you, Teresa. That was fabulous. Lots of words of wisdom there. I'm just going to add one before we open up to questions, which we'll do in just a second. You had a really neat idea with the tape recorder if it's hard to record information. Anything they should check with their provider before doing that you would think of? Or I guess I'm thinking about permission from the healthcare provider to record them.
Yes.
I don't know that every...
Yes. Just like we would expect confidentiality from our healthcare provider, we have to respect their confidentiality as well, and just respectfully ask your healthcare provider if you could. Your healthcare provider might allow you to record the session, or you might just specifically say, "Could I please record the responses to my questions and to any instructions that you have to give me?"
Great. Yeah, that's a neat idea. Okay, I think just because of time, I think we should open it up to anybody who has any questions for us right now. So if you're still with us and would like to ask or make a comment, to unmute yourself, press *6, and we'll be happy to just identify yourself, and then we'll just by first name or whatever you'd like. Again, we are recording the session, so please be aware of that. And we look forward to hearing anything, any comments. I heard some beeps. I think somebody's trying to get in there. Hello?
Hi, it's Barbara Cadot here at the Psychiatric Patient Advocate Office with a question for Teresa.
Go right ahead.
Teresa, early in your presentation, and thank you, it was excellent, you made a comment about increased participation leading to increased chances of recovery. Can you talk about that a bit more? Is this based on any research that you're aware of, or is this something that's arising from people's experience?
There is actually research that's been done on this, and unfortunately I can't quote you the research paper right now, but there's been a lot of research done, I found, in searching the web in developing my speech on this particular thing. And certainly people will share that experience with you about how being able to take control of their healthcare, being able to make decisions in their healthcare, has empowered them not only in in dealing with their healthcare and improving their wellness, but also in about dealing with other life situations. So just feeling empowered, to deal with, whether it's going out and finding a job or volunteer work or education, they feel that this has been very beneficial and empowering to them.
That's a fabulously interesting question to me as well. It reminds me of a bit of information on a subject called motivational interviewing, which is basically a method of counseling or interviewing people that takes into account what stage the person's at, from being pre-contemplative to being more contemplative that there's something they can do or need to know about, to actually preparing and then taking action. And it has been found that as people move up those levels of not even knowing what they could do, to knowing what they could do, to preparing and then getting on with it, they take a more active role in whatever change or thing they're trying to do. So it's not exactly your question, but I think it's laterally related to it somewhat. So that has been shown to be quite helpful. So thank you. Feel free. Any more comments or questions? Go right ahead.
I was just going to share my own personal experience. Even in events where seclusion and restraint has been required, being able to be a part of that, where I've been able to sit down with my care providers and say, this particular method is helpful, this one is not, this is how I feel when I have this particular measure, has been very helpful in making that situation less traumatic. and just opening a dialogue up with my healthcare professionals who have often said, well, I didn't realize that that was a particular issue or that that was a particular concern. So, again, it's just empowering to take an active role in your healthcare, and it gives you the confidence that you need to apply it to other areas of your life.
Well, thank you for that. It's certainly not something that my mind would go to immediately when I'm thinking about active participation, but in a way, this is almost like an advanced directive in case you need an extreme measure to keep you and everyone else safe.
Right. But it's also about, you know, I spend a large part of my life letting people make decisions about me. You know, things were done to me instead of being a participant in that, that's very disempowering. And there's no way I could ever have achieved any level of wellness if I continued to let that happen and not become actively involved in that.
Wade Stevenson here. Just an observation from my part based on my own encounters with the mental health system professionally and otherwise. I think it's important that we try to promote that a recovery-oriented environment needs to be present so that patients in that are not disempowered, because in my travels through my own personal encounters with the mental health system and professionally, I found that when I was first encountered the health system a few years ago, it certainly was a disempowering experience for me, because at the time it was not recovery-oriented, and I've since gone on to work professionally in the mental health field, and I find the attitudes vary. Older docs seem to be very old school and try to make decisions for their patients, and newer docs seem to be oriented towards getting the client involved in the process and engaging them actively. However, I'm finding some those docs that are working in environments that aren't oriented towards recovery are being ground down, and that's not serving patients or consumers too well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe I'll just comment. Teresa, did you want to comment on that one? Thanks, sir. That's a great input. Do you want to comment on that one, Teresa?
No, you go ahead.
I'll just comment from some of my training. I started my career as a family physician, in fact, prior to returning and pursuing mental health. And I recall learning three models of sort of client and provider interaction. They may be a bit abstract, but one is an active-passive model, and that may be the more traditional old-school model that you're referring to, where the provider makes the decisions and the recipient just takes those decisions. And obviously, there's a lot of drawbacks to that. However, there are a few clients who actually just say, you know, on occasion they're overwhelmed and if they trust the provider, they say, please just tell me what to do. So there still is a place for that, and the point is that you have you contract with them and request that and you agree to that, because in fact some people prefer that. Perhaps a more acceptable one is moving along the scale of something called guidance and cooperation, where the provider guides you given their knowledge, that's why you're there, and you cooperate and maybe go along if you believe they're doing the best for you. And the most current and perhaps my favorite, and the one we're talking about and you're strongly advocating for, is the mutual decision making, where you're an active participant, you're empowered, and together you sort out, here are the options, what would you like to do? I'm a strong advocate for those. I think a lot of outcome research is showing that is ideal. There are a few people who actually prefer the old school ones, and some providers who are ground down by only being able to do that one. So I don't know if that's helpful to you, but I definitely agree that there will be resistance out there.
Really, that was just an observation on my point. Part.
No, it's huge, and I think it's a very important point. And again, as Teresa mentioned, in places where you may not have the choice, that's very unfortunate, because not everybody has the choice of switching providers to a model that works for them. Have you found any, just Dwight, has there been anything you've been able to do to help move a more resistant provider who won't let you participate, to move them along in any way?
Well, at least from my own personal encounters, I found when I had to actually educate my provider on new models.
That's fabulous. And in fact, the treatment guidelines on the Mental Health Minute that we're doing, in fact, lay out some of the basics that you should expect so that you can take it to the provider and actually change their behavior. So in a way, this model has been found going directly to the person receiving the services to be very empowering. That's great.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea, that we do have to educate those service providers that don't have an understanding of recovery philosophy. And it's through that education that we're going to be able to make some changes. But I also think it's important to I can't say that every doctor or healthcare provider that I've come in contact with has had a recovery philosophy. In fact, many of them are grounded in the medical model where you take your medication or you're hospitalized. Mm-hmm. But what I do find in talking to my peers, I do a lot of advocacy work on behalf of my peers or with my peers, and, you know, they come to me and say, well, I want to change my medication. And I said, well, have you spoken to your doctor about that? And they go, well, no, I'm afraid to talk to my doctor. And this is where I want to share with my peers and encourage them to help them to develop good communication skills so that they can open up that dialogue with their doctors, because if they're taking medications that's causing troubling side effects, and then they're saying, well, I'm not going to take my medication because of those troubling side effects, and they're too afraid to talk to their doctor about that, then we all know where that's going to end, and nobody wants it to end that place. So it's about empowering people to take that control and creating these dialogues with their healthcare professionals.
Absolutely. I can tell you, sitting on the side where I, as a provider, what I try and encourage people to do is use I statements, starting with the word I, the capital letter I, as a, referring to the first person, because when they come to me and say, I don't feel I know my options, I don't really understand them, can you help me, I love to help them, and I'm not personally threatened. If they come in with the you statement, you're not telling me what I can do, you're not being, immediately I feel a little bit on the defensive. So in a way, if people want to speak to their provider and manage their provider to get to the same place, that's just a strategy using I statements, because it's really about where you're at. And most people can identify with that and help support that, even if they're the more traditional old style.
Stacy?
Okay. Yeah, hi, Stacy. Go right ahead. Anybody else out there with a question or comment for us at this point?
Yes, this is Karen from Brantford. I'm quite interested in we go to our health practitioners, be them generic or the medical profession. I'm quite interested in the electric information database with, say, myself, I'll use I, as a person has a personal, confidential, private issue, and with the electric information database health, how does one really know that that is kept private without being entered into the database? How does a consumer know that?
Teresa, any comments on that one?
Well, that's a really good question. Sort of, we're always expected to take a lot of things at blind faith. Your hospital providers will have someone actually that's in charge of the information and health privacy, and they could give you details about how they protect your information. It's certainly, there are guidelines and regulations set out under the law that healthcare providers have to follow, and certainly more and more healthcare professionals are starting to use electronic records, and we need to ensure that that information is private and confidential, and that only the people that should and need to access those records at an appropriate time are. But to tell you that there is a particular organization or process that's out there so to ensure that that's happening, I think we have to check individually with each of our healthcare providers and any organization that they belong to.
But right. And then because a lot of consumers in the community-based service, which they are more geared to now than hospital, there's a lot of individuals from the old school of mental health, I will say, have reluctant to verbalize real concerns because of the electric database, where you may look at your records and there's something in there that is not correct, but they can write up, but they cannot have it taken away. So that is detrimental to consumers' recovery.
I can't talk about experiences across the province, but here in Ontario, if you view your health care record and there's something in there that you disagree with, you can do one of two things. You can ask for a correction, but it's up to the health care provider on whether they agree to make that correction, or you can make a dispute, and that would be included in your health care record. And it would state something like, you know, that you didn't agree with this particular note or information in your health care record.
Great.
Can I add something, Teresa?
Yes.
It's Barbara Cadot here at the Psychiatric Patient Advocate Office.
Yeah.
On our website, we list a number of info guides, including info guides on accessing your personal health record, disclosing information, what personal health information is, et cetera. And that'll contain, and we hope, very clear and easy to read and understand format information about how to access, disclose, and what the provider's responsibility is in terms of your own personal health information. And I would just like to echo what Teresa said, that you always have the right to ask your health professional what they are doing to keep your health information private and safe, and that we also have an Information and Privacy Commissioner in Ontario who will also have a website that will probably contain information about health records as well.
Okay, thank you.
Great, thanks, Barb.
Thank you. Maybe anybody with a last question, because I'm watching the clock here and our time is nearing an end. Any other comments or questions from anybody? Okay. I'm just going to just, if anyone has one, please just jump in. But I'm just going to comment on one or two more things I heard that I think it's great when people, as Teresa mentioned, write down a few things when they come to see their provider, because at the moment they may not remember everything. But be aware of the number of things you can bring to the provider at any one visit. And perhaps picking a couple of the more important ones or finding out how much time they have on that particular visit, that can be helpful. Taking somebody with you can be great because they may be able to remember some of the feedback you got because when people are not feeling well, they're not able to process very much, as Teresa mentioned. And in fact, writing some things down, perhaps not volumes, but even sending it ahead of time so the provider knows what to expect and how to focus their feedback, that can also be a good strategy for you to consider. And the final one, it taps into this idea of health information and technology and the Internet. People often will find out a variety of information and come to their provider with a stack of information. The provider may be overwhelmed by how much you have, and it's the credibility of what you have that's important for you to check as well before you bring it, because there's a lot of information out there. So when you're doing your own searching and before you speak to your provider, try and check out the quality of the information, where it's coming from, so that you can evaluate that as well. So those are my only tips as we go along. Any last comments, Teresa, before we finish today's seminar?
No, I just want to remind people to speak up, ask questions, and become empowered. It'll change your life.
That's absolutely wonderful to hear. And so I just want to thank Teresa. Thank you so much for taking the time out today, particularly at this time for you. I'm really glad you could inform us and join us today. I want to thank all our callers for taking the time out. Hopefully this has been of help to you. We will be hopefully posting this on the www.mentalhealthminute.com website so that you can listen again or share it with people or refer them to the site and our other multimedia resources, treatment guidelines, information, video casts, minutes will be available there as well. So thank you, everybody. It's been an absolute pleasure, and we hope we've done a little bit to improve people's empowerment and recoveries with today's seminar. Thank you, Teresa.
Thank you.
Thank you, everybody. Take care.
Barbara.
Wade Stevenson.